We are... We are desperately trying to finish the first parak. We went through the pilgrimage, we went through Chana at the Mishkan, the different aspects of her tefillah, her prayer, and the dynamic between her and Eli was our major theme last week. And now she is successful. Lo and behold, she has a child. And we started on that last week and made some minor notes, but we left the major question still. If you take a look back again at Pasuk Yud Tet, sentence 19, that's where the success begins, where we're told they wake up in the morning, they have some kind of a prayer, they bow before God, they go back home, and lo and behold, Chana conceives and names the child Shmuel, Kimei Hashem She'iltiv, because I have requested him from God. That seems to be the simplest translation. I have requested him from God. So, that's a problem. And we started on this question last time. It's a problem because that's not what the name Shmuel means. The logical name, if you're going to say requested from God, is Shaul, which would be a great name for someone in this book. So the question is, what exactly is going on? So take a look at your first source, which is my favorite.
Well, it could be like Shomea, like God heard, but
not with an eye. There's no eye.
Yeah, but
there's no eye, and it's not what she said. So take a look at number one. Ralbag always likes to cut to the chase. He says, "V'im amor Omer." If somebody would say, "Shaya ra'oyim kein shetikare shmo Shaul," that then he should be named Shaul, not Shmuel. Amar nulo, we would say to him, "Ki lo yidaktiku korea shemos kol kach." People aren't that precise when they give names. It's associated with something from God. They ask from God. Yeah. Hello, Tira Leia. Look at Leia. Shekara shem benar uvein. Right? She calls Reuven Reuven. But the reason she calls him Reuven is not Reu, Bain, see, a son. Kira Hashem ve'onya. I underlined in order to make it clear what he's saying. She said, Hashem saw my oni. So really, there should be an I in there.
My misery.
My misery. I translated here as suffering. I think that's fair. But the point is that the word oni should figure in. And it doesn't. V'nikrashem Noach, or look at the naming of Noach. Le'mor zeh yinachameinu mima'aseinu. The pasuk there says that the reason why he's called Noach is this one will be menachem us, will comfort us from our deeds and so on. V'yaroi gam kin shiyishmo menachem. So his name should have been Menachem, not Noach. And in fact, that's a legitimate question that gets asked on that parsha. Why is it that he's not right? Nachum, Menachem. But what does Yinachameinu have to do with Noach? And the answer Ralbag says is, don't worry about it. People aren't that that precise.
They weren't good spellers?
No, they just didn't. That wasn't their point. Their point was, this name sounds good. It'll carry a nice message, even if it's not,
you know,
the exact word.
What about somebody
I
know named the kid for Gobi, and Gobi loved Israel, so they called the kid Israel or something.
Well, that's even further.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not connected with the sort of like the grammar of the name or the
correct.
What was the reason for Sarah's name turning to Sarah versus?
So the Chumash doesn't give us an explanation. Only Sarai to Sarah,
right?
Which we say means we say the Chumash doesn't say this that it's from my noble to general. She's the noble like for the world.
Okay, so
the Engel Chai is Chava.
Right,
so the question is, it should be Chaya.
Right.
Yeah.
But I still think that she calls him Shmuel because from God. Like, it's very, clear.
Shmuel, God heard. It wouldn't have an I in. It said Shmuel, he heard. There wouldn't be an I in. So
why wouldn't there be an I in? Of course there should be an I in.
Shmuel,
if she wanted to say God heard, which she didn't say, she said I asked him from God. She didn't use the word.
No, I understand that.
But if she were doing that, then there should be an I in. So that's one answer. Radak offers another answer. And Hang on.
Just don't worry about it.
That's what Bhakti answer, yeah. He says, I'm going to hang up on it.
Okay.
The Radak offers a different answer, and I found it easier, both for Radak and for Abarbanel, both space-wise and just clarity, to provide it in with this list of approaches as opposed to trying to show you the way it works in his text. Radak's idea is that it's a hybrid name. It's a hybrid of two ideas. Sha'ul, that he was requested, right? I requested him, is one, but also he is Mekel, he is from God. Obviously, it's not a kuf, it's an aleph, but that's because I want you to be able to, dispose of the paper properly. Sha'ul, Mekel, Shmuel. That's the way Radak does it. There's a Rashi that's similar in this to this idea. It also happens to fit very nicely with the idea that we saw last week, where Rashi quoted a medrash about the voice predicting there's going to be a righteous person born whose name is Shmuel. So that fits this idea that she's combining. He is requested. He is Shaul. Make hail from God. Shmuel. That's how you get it. Abarbanel doesn't take the hybrid idea. He says it's a unified message. It's a single message, not two different ideas. But he says it's one message which is expressed in the words asked from God. And he says, I can see three ways to do this. Either what she's saying is, I asked for him and God placed him in me, and it's Samo Kale. God placed him, Samo Kale. Now, you could have said, name him Samael, but Samael is a bad name. Samael is some kind of an Esav association. We don't want to name him Samael. So, Samo Kale. Then his second one is, simply, I asked for him, and he is from God, so just it's May Kale, from God. May Ale, not the Kuf again. The shin in the front is just there. Or a third approach, I asked for him from God, and his name, capital H, God's name is Kale. So Shmo Kale. That's another way to take it. So all of these different ways in which you can get the idea that he is requested and provided by God in the name Shmuel. The Dat Mikra says something, though, Professor Kiel says something that I think makes a lot of sense. He says, if you take a look at number 3, V'lo tamid na'agu kadmonim l'chadesh shemos chadashim. He says, they didn't always make up new names. Meaning you find names that are recycled in the Chumash. Kiim lakhu, we'll talk about them in a moment, about particular examples. Kiim lakhu me otzer ha-shemos ha-nahug b'svivosam. They had a certain population of names that people used locally. V'chazru v'dor shum al-shem ha-me'ora. And then they analyzed those names. I didn't have a good translation for Doresh in this context, so I just had linked their meaning. But they link the meaning of an existing name with an event that took place. So the name Shmuel already existed. It was already a name that was in use, and indeed it's found. I gave you the reference at the end of number 4, Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Chaf, which is actually this week's Parsha. So you'll see there the name Shmuel. So don't get hung up on, it's a Dat Mikra saying, don't get hung up on, it doesn't quite fit. They're taking an existing name and tying it to an event, saying, look, I asked God for him, Shaul Mei Hashem, I'm going to use the name Shmuel, which is a name they had anyway. And the reason I like this is because it explains something else that happens in the Chumash. I gave you two psukim in Bereishis to look at. Anyone remember what those are?
26, yeah. Perek or
Pasuk? You see it right in front of you there, you can see. 26:34.
I didn't hear the answer.
I didn't answer it.
I thought somebody did. Isn't
he the deed of the American Esau?
You can see the reference there, number 4, those who have a full Tanakh.
Basma?
Yeah, Basma isn't the name that gets reused.
I know, I don't like
Really? I feel like it's a Turkish name. It's Basmati, right?
Basmati, I remember that. So, I understand why Yehuda would be named after Esau's, like, Yehudit.
Right, so you see what I'm pointing out here, right? Those who have seen the Pesukim know what I'm talking about. On the one hand, in Bereishit 26:34, we find out who Esav married, not Bamidbar. Oh, you're looking at the other pasuk. You're looking at the Shmuel pasuk. That's why. Okay, you're allowed. Bereishit 26:34 tells us that Esav marries a woman by the name of Yehudit, and then Bereishit 29:35 has Leah name her son Yehuda, clearly an associated name, but she doesn't say I'm naming him for, you know, his bad uncle's wife, for Esav's wife. That's not what she says. She invents a reason. Hapam odeh es Hashem. Now I will thank God. But the name existed before this story. She didn't make up the name. What she's doing is she's taking an existing name and linking it to an event. Her thanks to God. She says, I'm grateful to God. Being grateful to God is hoda'ah. Therefore, I'm going to name him Yehuda. But the name exists already. You follow? That's the idea. She's naming for an emotion. She's naming for an experience, and she chooses a name that's a known name to use.
This is Kafav.
Yeah, Lama Dalad.
So why do we name a lot of people Yehudit? Yeah. Like, why is that
sorry?
Why do you name a lot of people Yehudit?
So Yehudit, I think at this point people usually think of Judith from Hanukkah as the or the Apocrypha.
She wasn't even Jewish.
Whether she's Hanukkah or not.
Sorry, what did I do wrong to you?
You didn't do anything wrong.
A lot of people use it as a feminine.
How's
it
going about it?
She wasn't Jewish, right?
Okay, so where is Shmuel?
No, this is Yehudit. That's
of the Judah. Yehudit. You say a feminine of Judah.
Shmuel is in this one.
Right.
So why did you point this out?
That it's many times in the Bible.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yehudit is here, and Yehuda is here. And the fact that Leah names her son Yehuda and gives an explanation.
We're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought we were talking about the name Shmuel.
Right, so what we're saying is Shmuel is a name that's given, which exists earlier in the Chumash, and she is simply applying it to her situation with her explanation, much as Leah takes the name Yehuda, which exists earlier in Chumash, and gives it her own explanation. That's what I'm getting at.
I can hear you, but so this is Shmuel, or this is another?
That's Shmuel. Okay. So that's the idea here, is that the name that's being used, and this is the Dav Mikra's explanation. I don't think he gave the Yehuda Yehudit example, but I think it's very clear. It's very clear. This is what's going on here. She's using the name Shmuel, which already exists, and simply tying it to her event. And if it doesn't fit grammatically perfectly, that's really not a big deal. Often, yeah. I mean, we tend to also name for people, which you don't really find as an idea in Chumash.
But like if you felt like grateful if the pregnancy was hard, blah, 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 right. Blah, and people, yeah. You take an existing name.
I know I had that. Somebody called me a couple of days ago with a naming question. They wanted to name for somebody who had Ayin Zayin Resh in their name. They didn't like to use that particular name. It didn't fit for particular reason, but they wanted to name for somebody who had Ayin Zayin Resh in the name of the person they were naming for. So they wanted to know what our options are. So there are other formulations of Ayin Zayin Resh names. There's Ezra, there's Elazar, there's Eliezer, there's Azriel, like all sorts of different names that you can give. And I said, if you really just wanted the theme of God's help, then you can name him Sadia. Right? Zad Ka, Hashem's assistance.
Nobody's named Sadia anymore.
No. I have a son named Sadia.
Yes. Who's Sadia?
Aharon is Aharon Sadia.
So what did they choose?
Yeah,
I won't tell you, because then you'll know who it was who asked me. You may not know them, but someone here may know them. I wouldn't do that. Okay.
Is it true that you're not to name a baby after a child who died tragically?
So there is a tradition of not naming after somebody who died under terrible circumstances. You know, there are various ways that people deal with that, but there is such a tradition of avoiding that.
So when I name my daughter, Mary, my daughter Mihira is the second name after her
her father's little boy who was killed in father's brother who was killed in the war. Is that okay when I transfer it to
a It's all okay. It's never not okay. It's never not okay, and especially once the name's given. Okay. The other elements of these psukim, that's in terms of the name, but there was another element in the psukim that I wanted to highlight here, this passage where Elkanah says, all right, I'm going to the Beit HaMikdash. You know, it's time for me to go and thank God and so on. And Hannah, you coming? And Hannah says, nope. Not this year. Sorry. The Chana lo alah, so it said in Pasuk Chaf Beis, right? Chana did not go. Ki amra le'isha, she said to her husband, Adi gamel hanar, when the kid is weaned, Vavi Yosef, then I'll bring him. V'nirah es p'nei Hashem, then we will be seen before God. V'yashav sham ad olam, and he will stay there forever. And Elkanah, in time-honored tradition, says, do what you want. Asiya tov v'nayich. But the question that I had in reading this was, I understand, you know, she doesn't want to go until the kid is weaned. That I get. But why are you bothering to give me this story? Why does this story matter?
It shows that her husband respected her.
Could be.
Except when my mother said, do whatever you want, she usually meant the opposite.
Right.
Okay, do whatever you want.
No, but he loves her and he agrees with everything she does.
Does he know that she offered him to go?
Yes, she does. No, but he does.
He didn't.
I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago and it wasn't clear. But certainly at this point she has said it to him explicitly.
And so it's showing that they're both of one mind.
Maybe. It's hard. For me, this was a hard thing to understand.
What part of it I don't understand?
Why are you bothering to tell me about her deciding not to go this year?
Why is it important?
It's also like not her. She's always there. She goes every year. It was a big part of the beginning of the story.
Right, that's true.
Like why, you know, you have to have some reason why she's not going this year.
Okay, maybe.
But still, she could have gone and brought him along.
They could have said 3 years
past,
and she went back.
Sorry, Ruth, what?
What about nurturing and feeding the child, like literally feeding his soul as a child, and then to be in good health, and then serve God?
So in other words, he's trying to highlight the care that she's giving.
Yeah,
I think. Why could she not bring him along?
Because it's bad for him. That's the point. Is that she's saying he's too delicate for him to
make this journey. No, I know, but just continue nursing him, and then go home, and then when she weans, then go back.
And the answer is that traveling in those days, for you to do that with a baby,
every other year that they had gone, and her sister, sorry, not sister, the other one,
rival,
Nina. Did she never have young kids?
Maybe Nina never went in the first couple of years after the baby was born. Maybe she skipped those years. We don't know. We're not given any information.
Hannah has made decisions that are strong ones, so this is another.
Right, it could also be she said, this is what I need, or this is what the kid needs.
But you think she'd be so happy to find out the kid, she would go and thank Hashem and want to go, and
then realize she has to leave him there.
But she has to kind of give him over, so this is.
Well, she does. Well, that's the text didn't say.
Well, didn't it say in the text what age she's going to bring him, did it?
When she weans.
When she, no, did it?
Two or 3 years old, yeah.
Oh, but if that had been the norm, like she wouldn't have had to leave.
Right, so that's part of what we have to look at here. So take a look on your sheet at number 5, where the Gemara talks about Chana's decision not to go that year. It sounds like this is the annual visit because he's going to bring Zebach HaYamim, the offerings of the Yamim, and we said that going the Yamim Yamima was the annual visit. That's what we think is going on. The Gemara in Chagiga, though, assumes, and we saw that others assumed this as well, that this occurs on a Yom Tov. This trip, this annual trip, is on one of the regalim. We saw that when we talked about the pilgrimage originally, that it's on a Yom Tov. And the Gemara actually uses it as a point to discuss the question of who is obligated to go for Aliyah L'Regel, who has to go to the Beit HaMikdash for Yom Tov. Heishiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel. This is a debate between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And Rebbe answers on behalf of Beis Hillel, L'divrei Beis Shammai. He says, according to Beis Shammai's view, you have this pasuk which says, "V'chana lo alasa ki amra li'ishad yigamel adigamel anarva v'yosif." Chana didn't go because she said to her husband, "When the kid is weaned, that's when I'm going to bring him." So he says, "Beit Shammai believes that you're supposed to bring the child, let him ride on his father's shoulders." So Shmuel could have been carried. His father could have carried him. Right? I mean, he's a year old, so he's not, it's not like what he's happy right on the shoulders, right? The point is, father could have carried him.
How is he a year old?
He's within a year.
Within
a year, yeah. No more than 1 year. So Amar Le'avua, so his father responded, V'lita Meich. Well, let's ask this question a little further. According to your view, you're taking the view that there was some kind of an obligation here, and he should have had the kid ride on the shoulders. Tikshila Chana Gufa. You should ask the question, forget the kid. What about Chana? Milo Machayva Besimcha. Isn't she obligated in rejoicing for Yom Tov, which should include eating from the karbanot, which are brought to celebrate? Ella, the answer is that for both of these points, both Chana's personal obligation and the duty to bring the child, the answer is that there's another element. Chana mifankusa yeser sachazi baby Shmuel. Chana saw in Shmuel an extra delicate character, which may also answer the Penina question. She said, you know what? This is a kid who needs some pampering. He's not going to be able to do it. And she was worried. It's hard to travel like this. This is going to be too much for him. So she said, I don't want to bring him. I'm looking out for the kid and not going to worry about other obligations. But in terms of why the text goes out of its way to talk about this, you could say it's a lesson in the care that she gives to her child. You know, it could be that's the answer. But I think that my question of why spend time on this is why Malbim says what he says in number 6. And some of you were already going in this direction as we were talking about the question a couple of minutes ago. Malbim writes, Hagam shahaya derech hayolados la'alos be'atzmanu l'havi kineyan. He says, the truth is, women who gave birth, remember that a woman who gives birth brings a special karban after giving birth. Right, after 40 days or after 80 days, depending on whether it's a boy or a girl, but they bring a karban. So that bird offering that they bring, women who gave birth, usually just after the 40 days or after the 80 days, went on their own. They didn't bring the whole family. It wasn't a Yom Tov. They just did it.
Traveled on their own?
That's what he thinks. Because the mitzvah really is, you bring your own karban. You don't outsource it. Granted that it wasn't always so. There were times when people waited, and they'll wait till it's a better time. But b'chol zeh lo alah, says she didn't go. B'asher chashva shebechlal nidra hi shebepam harishon shetivieihu v'yeroi p'nei Hashem lo yamush misham v'lo yashuvo lebeiso. Because she envisioned in her vow that on the very first time she would go there, he would never leave. She would bring him, and that would be it. So she said, when he's weaned, that's when I'm going to bring him. In other words, the vow was not eventually he's going to be dedicated. The vow was, on his first visit, he stays. And she is not willing to go, even to bring her karban, unless she can fulfill that vow. It's meant to demonstrate, I think, how seriously she takes the neder. She says, even though I'd like to bring my karban, right? And I have a duty to do it, not until I can fulfill the vow that I have made. I can't do that yet. He needs more time. He needs to be weaned. So to me, that's a second important part of this passage here. We get the naming of Shmuel. We get Chana delaying, but teaching us along the way the value of the neder. And now we finally get to her arrival. Pasuk Chaf Dalet.
Do you have any trouble with this phrase, Israel was a delicate character?
Why?
I just don't see him that way. I mean, given the magnitude of what he accomplished in his life, I just don't see him that way.
Yeah, but this was when he was a year old.
I don't think he's a year old.
Right, so he's maximum of a year. That was
no, because they went every year, correct?
Correct.
So she went, then she came back and got pregnant, then there is 9 months, and then it started to go again, so he must be just a few months.
Again, the pregnancy may have been 6 months, 6 months and 2 days, but yes, you're right. It's not a year, correct. That's true. But I understand what you're saying. I was wondering about it as I read it, because Shmuel is the one who goes traveling all over the place as a judge and so forth. But I didn't have anything I could do with it.
But you get children who are delicate, who keep getting in, and then as they grow older, they become stronger.
Yeah. Maybe that's delicate.
What was the source that he was early? You had a source, so maybe
that
he was more delicate.
That was the pasuk that said with kufot hayamim, and the gemara read that as 6 months and in 2 days. Well, I mean, that's my translation. The original was mifan kusa yisirsa, which just means an extra delicate something. You're thinking modern Hebrew. You're thinking of modern Hebrew. Right, but I'm dealing with the original Aramaic from the Gemara.
Works against you.
Why? It is. That's what it is. It's a bird offering.
Bird? I thought it meant bird.
No, it's bird. Kinim are bird offerings. A cane is an S, like Shiluach HaKain is the mitzvah of sending away a mother bird. My spell check fails me all the time, but not in this case.
What is a bird? And what bird?
So either turtle dove or pigeon. Yeah.
Not chickens?
No. Chickens are not brought at Kavanot.
Okay.
There's more chickens. Never.
And this would take priority over her going to give a carbon.
Yeah, she has a requirement. Good, yeah, the carbon, and her carbon will wait.
Isn't that mitzvah's man, Grandma? With the crunch of the Talmud, does she have to go for Aliyah LaRegel as a woman obligated?
Right, so women are exempt from Aliyah LaRegel.
Yeah, so that would be a reason.
Right, she is not a vechiyuv of Aliyah LaRegel.
Or she's not.
No. Simcha, yes, Aliyah LaRegel. Okay, so let's get to that dedication.
That's a practical question.
Or not. Yes.
She's going to, eventually leave him there. It's going to be 3 years old.
Don't worry, Ailey can look out for him.
Okay, what's going on then?
You know, this is back in the old days.
I know.
At the age of 2, you were apprenticed to somebody.
Where's he going to live?
Well, they said Rivka was going to marry him.
He's going to live in the Mishkan, he's good.
He's okay.
Apparently, he does.
Okay. Remember, he wakes up at night. Yes,
yeah.
He will.
No, they
will look after him. He'll wake up at night.
And the answer is hopefully, Ailey is going to hire somebody.
Well, who cooks for Ailey? Does Ailey do all his own cooking?
We don't know. We're not given that kind of information.
What does it do to his psychological well-being when he starts to rip?
Well, you have to get to the rest of the book so we can find out what he does.
It's totally special.
Pasuk of Dalet, sentence 24. Don't show over the next paragraph. Okay. Pasuk of Dalet. So she brings him up with her, Kasher Gemalatu, after he has been weaned, Bifarim Shalosha, with 3 bowls, Ve'efa Achaz Kemach, and an Efa volume, Efa is a volume measure, an Efa of flour, Ve'nevel Yayin, and a flagon of wine.
Where is the bird?
This is separate. This is the offering that's being brought with Shmuel. This is not her personal carbon. Vatviyehu veis Hashem Shiloh, and she brought him to the house of God to Shiloh. Vehanar naar, and the youth was, you could translate naar either as a noun or as a verb. It sounds like it's a verb here, naar, that he served is the way the Da'at Mikra takes it. Alternatively, you could take it to mean that he had grown and become a youth.
Was still tender.
So they're reading it. They're not reading it as a verb then.
The child was young.
So the problem is the word na'ar admits of multiple readings in Tanakh. We find the word na'ar used with people who are much older.
Yeah.
As well. Yosef is a na'ar when he's in jail in Egypt. He's a maximum of 37. We don't know how old he is. He's maximum.
He's not a year old. And
correct.
That's where the problem is.
I wouldn't get hung up on the word nar. Keep in mind, nar comes from the term one who moves around a lot. That's what it is. Lina'er is to shake something and so on. Yeah, so it means kids, because kids are always in motion. You know, but it can be used to refer to somebody. Eliezer gets called a nar. It can be used to refer to somebody who has a lot of energy, somebody who is very active. It doesn't have to. Yishmael is called a nar for sure when he is 17, when he's kicked out of the house, and possibly is the one who's referred to as a nar much later on at the Akedah. The when Avram goes with the Shnei Naharav. Again, that's what I'm trying to say. The word, don't get hung up on the word nar, because you can't read, you can't explain nar as being age specific. It doesn't work.
When did we see yelet anywhere in the Bible? I don't think so.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
The that's not the word yelet shows up.
Yeah.
The but I wouldn't get hung up on nar. It's not it's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, Shnei Naharav is so.
Yeah,
assistants.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, but they would
already get
it.
When Yaakov, for example, in Vayishlach, when Yaakov crosses the Yabok, right, he takes Achadasar Yeladav. Yeah. And also, actually, with Yitzchak, Vayigdal HaYeled VaYigamal, right?
In this book, the explanation says that the child was quick-witted and discerning.
Ooh, quick-witted and discerning. Who are they quoting?
When it says JK and DK.
Okay. Maybe, I mean, DK could be Radak. I don't know what their acronyms are.
Yeah,
I don't know. No, DK could be Radak, but I don't know.
Okay.
This is not a concordance. This is an acronym. I gave a couple of the.
I know, that's what I said. Did you?
No, you just have the link. If you're a Valkyria, you have that thing stick in your head. Okay. So again, we're talking about what she brings as her carbon, and it's this very large carbon that's being brought. But now look what happens. Vayishchatu es hapar, they shat the bull. Vayaviu es hanar el Eli, and they brought the kid to Eli. What's strange here?
There are
three bulls, right? Which bull did you shat, and why did you stop? You shechted a bull, one of the three, and then you just halted. So that's one problem. Next, Pasuk Chavav, Vatomer bi Adoni, and she said, bi Adoni. Now I'm going to ask you to take a look at your translations. Don't say anything. Bi Adoni normally means please my master. Do any of you have translations that don't translate bi Adoni as please my master? Do your translations say anything other than please my master?
Please my lord.
Oh my lord.
Oh, instead of please? All right. Okay, keep that in mind. She says, please my master. I'm going to go with that. Chei nafshecha Adoni. By your life, my master. She's swearing. Ani ha'isha ha'nitzeves imcha bazeh. I am the woman who stood with you here a couple years ago. Yeah, Eli Kohen Gadol, don't you remember? L'hispalel el Hashem, to pray to God. El hanar hazeh hispalalti. I davened for this kid. Right, four. Yeah. Vayitain Hashem li she'ela si asher sha'alti me'imo, and God gave me my request, that which I had asked of him that day. I don't think this means that she thinks that Eli doesn't know her. I don't think this violates the idea that she's a known person and so on, which we've discussed before. But she's telling him, I'm the one who was here, I'm the one who prayed, and God answered my prayer. V'gam anochi hish'iltihu l'Hashem. And now I, it sounds like, have lent him to God, Kol hayamim asher haya, all his life. Hu Shaul Lashem, she uses the word. He is Shaul, lent to God. Vayishtachu sham Lashem, and she bowed before God there, and then it's going to continue with her song. What's
she's
weird?
Lending him to God, or she bowed. Lending him to her. Interesting.
It says he, but what do you mean?
No, she's lending.
Oh, because it says vayishtachu, not vatishtachu. That's interesting. I read it as her bowing, but you're right, it's him bowing. That's very interesting. Actually, according to Rashi, Shmuel bowed.
That's what this is about.
Oh.
Yishtachu? Or it could be maybe the father.
Yishtachu
doesn't
mean the father. Ralbag said that it's Eli. We don't get Elkanah in this story at all. We don't know what his story is. But Ralbag says that it's Eli who's bowing.
Is it not plural? Yishtachu?
No.
No.
No, not necessarily. Some you, if it were vayishtachavu, it would be plural.
That's what I'm saying. Doesn't look
vayishtachu.
Sorry.
It doesn't look familiar. Yishtachu from yishtachavu is.
No, that's common. That's common. Yeah. If you look at Yaakov and Esav, vayishtachu aretz hasheva pe'amim, when Yaakov goes to meet Esav. So again, what we're seeing here is Hannah addressing Eli, giving the child to Eli, but I am missing some. I'm missing a couple of things here. What's strange about what Hannah says to Eli? What are we highlighting here?
This is the child that I prayed for.
Yeah. What about it? Well, what's strange about that?
She has to explain to Ellie again.
Well, I mean, she's showing up after a couple of years, to be fair. But also, she's making a declaration. Yeah.
Right, she's also praising God, and she's like, by telling people, whoever else is listening, hey, God answered my prayer. I want everyone to know.
Right, it's a good point.
But in the first time, when she talked, when she names him, she calls him Pimeshem She'altib. I asked him, Nish'ol, right?
Yes.
And here, it's Ki Me'ashem, I dedicated him to him. I gave him to God. One is from,
what
one is
to. No. You're reading on which word?
I'm reading in English, but I
don't know. What word in the Hebrew?
Hish'il tiv.
They're picking up on the hey beginning. That grammatically changes it from to get, to ask for something or to borrow something, to lend it out, to give it away.
He's lending it.
It's changing the form. It's a different grammatical form.
But she asked for it from God.
That's sha'al tiv. This is hish'il.
Yeah.
The aleph is in both. It's sha'al tiv versus hish'il tiv. It's a different grammatical form.
Hish'il tiv means I borrowed it.
No, I
lent him.
Sorry. Yeah. She's saying I'm lending him, not giving him.
And if to put it in modern Hebrew, and to change the sentence a little bit, to ask for something, to borrow something, is lish'ol.
Right.
To lend it is lehashil.
Okay.
Yes. She says in pasuk kavzayin el hanar hazei felalti. It's like this is the one.
Which it is.
So. Why is she saying that?
I think that's part of her declaration. Yes. This is a formal dedication of the child. This bothers me less than,
I was like, what is she asking of Ailey? Be Adoni, what is she saying, please, Ailey? Like, what is she asking of him? And then she gets there. Does she want to say, this is my son?
Yeah.
It's almost like, why can't
she just say? That's the problem. The problem is the beginning.
Know that he's coming?
We don't know.
It sounds like she's asking.
He might not even know that she ever had.
We don't know. We don't know anything. I mean, the beginning of her address.
No Facebook.
The fact that she says, please, be Adoni, and the fact that she swears by his life. I don't know about you, but I'd be uncomfortable with someone swearing by my life. I don't think that's a good idea. Like, what exactly is she expecting opposition?
Maybe she wants him to take care of her side. Like, I'm going to be leaving him here. I request him from Hashem. You know, he's going to be staying here. And as a mother, she has to all, take care of him.
Yeah.
Where
are you?
But she doesn't actually say that.
Yeah, there is no request.
Right. Has anyone ever dedicated their child before?
Well, you'd have to ask Ailey. There's the Mishkan orphanage. That's the question here. And then the other piece of it is, and I guess this goes back to the question of, has anyone done this before? What is this? What is she doing? What do you mean you're lending your child to God? Where is that found in the Chumash? What mitzvah in the 613 is lending my child to God? Where did that come from? What?
It's a mitzvah of why?
No, but that's
completing your nether. It's a mitzvah of fulfilling your nether.
Right, but that just pushes back the question. Why take such a nether? What does she think she's accomplishing?
That's what I didn't want to know too.
There you go.
I'm troubled by that. I struggle. We're after Matan Torah. At what point is it not allowed to bow to other people?
No, he's bowing to God.
But
Yishtachu Sham Lashem. Yeah, bowing to God is okay. We're good with that.
She's not the first one to ask God for a child.
I think that's the shortest tangent we've ever had.
She's not the first woman to ask God for a child. And if every woman who asks God for a child will bring him to the Mishkan
we have to raise the cost of Truman Meiser. You're giving more than a half shekel this year, that's all.
They
have to raise the cost, that's all. We raise dues for the Mishkan. I think that what's going on here is a very important message which will feed into Shmuel's psychology, to go back to that question that was asked before, which is Shmuel is Hannah's karban. That's really the way that I perceive what's going on with Shmuel. This is a carbon model.
Is this her birth?
I mean, it's not in lieu of, but yes. And Malvin says this when he explains why Shmuel is brought after one bull has been shechted. The you know, this question that I asked, why do you only shecht one bull and then bring him? So Radak says that it's because one of the bulls is a karban and the others are meant for eating. So she shechted the bull that was for the karban and then saved the rest. That's Radak. Abarbanel is the opposite. Abarbanel says, no, they shechted one for their meal and then she went to Eli and then she's going to bring the rest of them. But Malbim is the key. Take a look at Malbim number 7. The kodem zrikas hadam, before sprinkling the blood, vayaviu es hanar el Eli, they brought the kid to Eli. In other words, when you shecht, you catch some of the blood in a vessel, and that's placed on the altar. And that's the act, that's the ritual. Before doing that, as part of, like, during the ritual, she brings the kid to Eli. Lirameis, to hint, kemoshe viu es hapar karban lashem, just like they brought the bull as a sacrifice to God, kein yiyeh hanar kalil lashem, the youth will be entirely for God, la'avod ulishareis, to serve in the Mishkan. That's the way Malbim sees it, and I think this explains everything about this passage, because we ask why she says please, and why she swears, like she has to convince Eli of something. So the so there are a few different takes. One take is Ralbag. And Ralbag actually says Eli is not interested in becoming the guardian of Shmuel. Take a look at number 8. Vidmeh, it appears, the bracketed letters are letters that I'm adding for grammar purposes. Vidmeh sha'amra le'Eli shehu yishayer sham. It appears that she told Eli, yeah, I'm leaving him here. Vahe Eli mitzachek zed lekotno. And Eli thought that was really funny. He thought, yeah, that's a nice joke. Ki alevi lo yikhanes la'avodah ki emi ben chav hei shana v'mala. A levi doesn't start working until the age of 25. And so Chana said, no, hear me out. She swore by the life of the high priest that she was the woman who had stood there praying to God. This is the kid for whom I davened. Through him, God fulfilled my request. Gam anochi hishiltiv l'Hashem la'avdo kol yamav. And now I have lent him to God to serve God all his life. Kederech hamashil devar ma lishtamesh bo, like you lend anything else. So Ralbag says that she has to say please and she has to swear to show that she's serious. That's Ralbag.
She still doesn't answer why she would do that.
Yeah, no, that's not what Ralbag is trying to answer. Ralbag is on the language. But my answer to this, which does address the overall question, is that he's a karban. Take a look at the last Gemara in Menachos, source number 9. Talking about the fact that we bring a karban to God, and why does God need my karbanot? And the answer is God does not need your karbanot. God doesn't eat. Shema tomar la'achila hu tzarich, lest you think God needs to eat, and that's why you bring a karban. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk in Tehillim, says, Im erav, lo omar lach, God says, if I ever hungered, I wouldn't tell you. I wouldn't go looking for you to feed me. Lo amarti alachem zivchu kideisha tomar e'aseret zono v'aseret zoni. I didn't say that you should slaughter karbanot. Say, you should say, I'm doing what God needs, and God's going to do what I need. Don't say that. Lo liritzoni atem zochim, el liritzonchem atem zochim. When you do this, it's not because I want the karban, it's because you want to give something. Shenera, the pasuk says, and this is what the Gemara is picking up on, Lirtzonchem tizbachuhu. When you bring a karban, do it because you want to. You are ratzon. Davar acher, alternatively, Lirtzonchem tizbachuhu means Lirtzonchem zivchu, ledatchem zivchu, that you should do it at your desire, do it according to your intent. The point is, and what the Gemara is getting across here, is that the way a karban works is it has to be voluntary. And what she is trying to do here in giving this whole declaration to Eli and in swearing by his life and saying, please accept this child, is that's what you do with a karban. When you bring a karban, you say, this is what I want to give, And that's what she's trying to that's what she's trying to convey.
So it's a korban of thanks, not a korban of
obligation.
Right.
And even if there were an obligation, you know, the it would also still only be valid if it was something you wanted to do. That's a separate point. Meaning a person who brings a chatat, a sin offering, but doesn't regret the sin, has not brought a proper korban. It doesn't work that way. Along the same lines, Abarbanel does something fascinating here, and this will feed into our impression of Chana's personality also. As you hear this, I'm going to hear more than one person start laughing, but nonetheless, he says, don't read be Adoni as please my master. Be can mean something else. Be can also mean in me. Mine. This is about me. Watch. Batomer be Adoni, she said, be my master. Achshov bazeh, I think, shelafisha el kana v'chana ishto shnehem yachad heviyu es hanar eleli, kemo shamar, since el kana and chana both bring the kid, chashash chana shema eli yisapek aleha hashela hamishit asher asiti v'parsha hazot. He says, she was worried that Eli might ask a question. Which is, by the way, the fifth question I asked in this section. What he means by that is the way of Abarbanel. And his commentary is, he introduces each section in Tanakh, wherever he makes his comments, by asking a whole bunch of questions about the next section, and then he launches into his explanation and resolves each of his questions. So he says, go back and look at question five. We don't have to, because he mentions it here. V'hi eich elkana lo asa haneder liyo Shmuel Nazir v'asa ochana. His question is, why is it that Chana makes the vow? Why did Elkana make such a vow? Why does this matter to him? We've talked about the fact that, technically speaking, her vow is ineffective. A mother cannot take a vow for her child to become a Nazir. A father can. The reason being, because the father has certain responsibilities for it. This is true for many things.
The child has to do it himself.
Right, so the child can do it himself, or the father can do it because the father has certain financial responsibilities when it comes to the child, and those also give him certain rights. In the same way, when you read the beginning of this week's parasha, when you read the beginning of Matos, right, you'll see there as well that there are certain rights that the parent has in terms of nullifying vows. It's because of the responsibility that, I should say, the father has, not the parent, that the father has. It's because of the responsibilities that the father has. So Abarbanel says, I don't understand. If the vow only works when he does it, why didn't he take the vow? Why is she taking the vow? L'chein amra Chana, therefore Chana says, Adoni, my master, al tachshov shelafi sheshneinu anachnu b'shaveh mevi'im zehanar. Don't think that just because we're bringing the kid together, shebeshaveh erech echad gamkein hayinu shutafim bo al kana ishi v'anochi ishto. Don't think that that means that Elkana and I were actually in this together, and he took the vow and I took the vow and we're all on the same page. Einochein, he says, not so. Ki ba'avuri uvesibasi levad nolad hanar. You want to know why this kid was born? It's because of me. Because of the vow that I took. That's why there's this child. Vizeo bi adoni. That's what she means when she says, be my master, rotzelomar, meaning, bavuri adoni. Because of me, my master, hayazeh hanar hanizkar. That's why this kid exists. And then ubeara lama haya besibasa velo besibas bala. And then she went on to explain, how do you know that it's from her and not her husband? Vama, she said, because ani haisha ani tsevesimcha b'makom hazeh l'spalel Hashem, because I'm the one who stood here davening for Hashem, the kaven to davening to Hashem for the child, the kaven shanochi ani tseves kan velo Elkana. And since I am the one who was standing here and not Elkana, hina im kain bi uvesibasi haya hanar. The kids, because I did it. Elkana, hang on. Elkana lo hispalel alav. Elkana didn't daven for him. Lo b'makom hazeh, lo b'beiso, lo b'makom achir.
Oh my God.
I knew you would like that.
How do I know? You're getting a bad rap here.
Yeah, seriously. You need to throw him under the bus. Sorry. All right, you were going to say?
I want to ask about
we like that.
What does it even mean to swear on someone else's life? If you swear on your own life, that you have consequences, you're going to uphold it. But like have to say, you actually make us swear on someone else's life, and if it doesn't come through, the other person dies. That's not fair.
And the answer is yes, you can. But what does it mean? When you swear by someone else's life, when you swear by someone's life, what does it mean?
It means if something happens that they're going to die.
No, it doesn't.
You're going to take care of them? Or
Yosef swears, right, to the brothers when they don't yet know he's Yosef. By the life of Paro, you're not getting out of this until you bring your brother. It shows you're serious when you swear by the king.
Does it have real implications? What happens if...
No, it doesn't. It's a statement of seriousness.
So it doesn't really have...
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. And that's what she's trying to do here, is she's demonstrating how serious she is. That's the idea.
So, didn't anybody else know that she made this... When she made her prayer...
We don't know. We're not given any information. We don't.
Yeah,
we just don't know.
Yeah, even Eli doesn't know. He just said... God should grant you your wish. He doesn't know what the wish was.
Right. We aren't given any specific information about it. But what I'm trying to get at here is, why is she stressing, within Abarbanel's read of Bi Adoni and the rest of the line here, why is she stressing that it's her gift, I'm the one doing this? So I would look at it and say that it's because it's important, because Shmuel is a karban. You bring a karban, the Kohen has to know who the Baalim are. Who is the bringer of the carbon? The truth is, there's discussion about this. What happens if there's money that was dedicated for a carbon? They are confused with other funds. Now, you don't know whose money it is, but leaving that aside.
Is there any other example that person brought the carbon?
No.
Carbon sounds like something.
No, because we don't do that.
Kill.
Right, normally we don't do that, no. This is unique. But I think that's why she's doing it, and she's saying, this is why I have the right to give him as a karban. Because I davened for him. I'm the reason he's here, because of the vow that I made to God. That's why he exists at all. He is really mine. And therefore, I am able to give him to God.
So then Abraham should have tried to give Yitzhak away.
God told him to. When God tells you to, that pretty much ends the conversation.
This is very difficult because we are raised to understand that God doesn't like korbans, human korbans.
Correct, and he doesn't. She isn't killing him.
But she's donating him.
Yes.
That doesn't really sit very well with us.
I understand your question, but I think the answer is that this is a carbon which is acceptable. This is effectively a carbon in which she's dedicating him to God. It's still strange. The only other one we have like this is the view that Yiftach's daughter was dedicated in this way, right? The debate that we saw ages ago about what happened with Yiftach's daughter. So remember that Yiftach says, whatever is the first that comes out of my mouth will be for God. He should have said that. Whatever comes out of his house is a double language. He says, it will be for God, I will bring it up as an olah. And commentators there say it's two different vows. If it's suitable as a karban, it'll be a karban. If it's not, I will give it to God, meaning dedicate it to God, and that's...
But he was criticized, but she was, you know, she's...
She's not criticized at all.
And also, I just think realistically, I have another question. Who's going to be? I know it's about taking care of. Who's going to be? I mean, I know he gets a tree.
The answer has to be that somehow they take care of it.
I mean, in the Misha, like in
that area. I mean, look, you have all the families of the Kohanim.
He's an old man.
Sorry, there was a question.
But in the Catholic faith, that they give their children to God as well. I mean, it's a big honor for your son to become a priest or your daughter to become a nun.
They were reading this book when they created it. Right. Yes. In the same way, Abarbanel says Yiftach's daughter is the precedent in the church for nuns.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Abarbanel's take.
I thought they married.
Beyond that, I couldn't tell you. So one more element. This also fits the idea that he is a karban to God. Fits her statement, "Hu Shaul Lashem," that he is being lent to God. Take a look at Radak in number 11. Radak has two comments. I'm referring here to one specifically, to Radak's first approach. Hishil Tihu, I have lent him. So Radak is bothered because he was given to you by God. So he says, Hechzarti lo ha-sheila shehunatan li, shehunatan lo. I have returned the loan that God gave. I'm returning it lo to him, to God. Hu Shaul, Kemonatun. Shaul doesn't mean lent, really. It means given. It's not like it's a loan that I'm claiming back at some point. Klomar, hu shahaya Shaul, hinehu natun l'Hashem. He was lent to me. God lent him to me. And now I am giving him to God. That's Radak's way of dealing with the problem of Shaul. Is he really on loan? Not on loan. That's a separate. That's a separate point. But the main reason that I bring you this Radak before we get to his second approach is to show you this idea. This is actually a gift to God. It's carbon formulation. Malbim also, if you jump to number 12. Says Shesha'alti ubikashti alav. I requested and asked for him leva'avur tachlis sheyi el Hashem, with the goal that he should be for God. Ve'alzeh hatnai hispalalti. That's why I did it. Ki chein nadra beis hatfila. It was on that condition that I prayed in the first place. That was part of her davening. That was it was in order for this to happen. Then Radak has this other explanation, which I bring you here in 11. It's from the Medrash in Abbas Drabi Nasan. The Yeshbo Drash, there's a Medrash here. Ba'osasha nitznitza ba ruach hakodesh. At that moment, divine inspiration blossomed, bloomed, flowered in her. Ba'amra saying, Kozman sheshmuel kayam shohul kayam. As long as Shmuel is alive, Shaul survives. Because she says, all his life, hu shohul l'ashem. So it's an association. Someone has to at least nod to the fact that we keep mentioning the word Shaul here. So that's what the Medrash does. But the last point within this, this dedication of Shmuel to Hashem as a karban, is that I think this feeds into his psychology, how he perceives himself. Meaning Shmuel becomes known for the fact that he takes nothing for himself. He's entirely devoted to God. When the people want a king, Shmuel says, all these years I've taken nothing. He travels around from place to place to place, you know, judging wherever he goes, not saying that people should come to him. Shmuel's persona is the karban, effectively. He is fully dedicated to God. So I think that he absorbs this by being given to the Mishkan at that early age. Okay, so we accomplished a lot today. The significance of Shmuel's name, Chana's delay, the dedication of Shmuel to God. There's always more you could do with this parak. This parak is endless. But the year isn't. And so what we're going to do at this point is, since we finished the parak, at least on some level, so we're going to break here for the summer. Toronto Torah lists us as having another week, but that's because I didn't think we were going to finish the parak. We actually did it. So we'll break here for the summer. And then we will resume. I have to figure this out. Do we bother resuming at the end of August? Do we wait until after Sukkot?
I'll try to do the last week in August.
You can't do the last week in August. Okay, so that's out. I mean, basically Rosh Hashanah is Sunday night, September 8th, 9th. So we're not going to do the Thursday. We're not doing the Thursday before Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, right.
I can't.
I don't know.
Right.
And I can't do the 30th.
So basically what it means is we're going to resume, but I am actually giving a shiur pre-Rosh Hashanah at Shari Shamayim on the Tuesday of that pre-Rosh Hashanah week, so it's September 3rd, 4th, or 4th? Tuesday, September 4th. And what I'm thinking right now, I don't know if this is going to be, but I think I'm going to draw on the Tefillah of Chana, which a lot of it will be in the big review because you saw it, but I want to talk about how that ties into our tefillah on Rosh Hashanah.
So it looks like this moment.